Hey everyone, welcome back to It Here in Apologetics. I am so pumped that you are joining us today. Today I have Dr. Charles either Tolliver or Taliaferro, depending on where you may be listening to this and what country. He's a professor emeritus of philosophy and an emeritus Oscar and Gertrude Bow Overby Distinguished Professor over at St. Olaf College. And today we're going to be talking with Charles about his life, his influence, things like that. So Charles, thank you so much for joining me. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. I'm really happy to be here. So it's great. Mm-hmm.
So Charles has been on the podcast before, but today's going to be a little bit different as we're looking at kind of like the life, the influences, the events, the people that kind of shaped Charles and his journey in the world of like philosophy. So Charles, to get started, do you want to talk a little bit first about like who you are and what you do?
Yeah, well, I've been an active college or university professor teaching at St. Olaf College, before that at Notre Dame, UMass Boston, for 40 years. And I've been very active in publishing. So I have co-edited or authored or co-authored about 40 books. And I'm really devoted to working with students. It's been kind of a shock on. Are we still on? Okay, my screen blanked out.
You paused for just a second. Maybe you just go. It was a shock, and then he froze. Maybe you just go from there.
Okay, it was a shock when I retired from full time teaching, and I probably dream about it four times a week. But I've been giving talks in China and Spain and Brazil, et cetera, et cetera. So. I'm active in my church. I'm an Episcopalian. I go to a cathedral, which is just outside my window. And for example, I'm offering a course on the philosophy of love to parishioners there. So I'm active as a practicing Christian. I'm active and speaking. I'm working on about two books right now.
So to start things off, Charles, how did you become a Christian?
Well, there would be two stages. One, as a child growing up in a Christian context. And it got a bit rough when I went to actually an Episcopal boarding school in Florida, but it was like Lord of the Flies. And my peers, these are ninth graders, actually burned down a chapel. They blew up three of my professor's cars. They took gas-soaked rags, blew them up, and there was an enormous amount of bullying. And I've only told this story once, so I thought I might conjure it up. But as a ninth grader and as having a devotion to God, I went to the chapel and prayed out loud, you know, for my friends and for the situation. And then there was this laughter in the chapel. And I realized the arsonists, my classmates, were hiding behind the altar. They had broken in, drunk the wine that was used for the Eucharist. And that was a shock to me, you know, just in terms of, I guess the word shock is I'm overusing it now, but that kind of, it didn't cause so much a crisis of faith, which was interesting, the boys who were expelled, but I was not bullied or teased for that pouring out of my heart, you know, for all those that were hurt. In any case, moving along, realizing time is precious, I drifted away from my whatever devotion I had as a ninth or tenth grader has. And by early college, I was kind of lost with psychotropic drugs such as LSD. I was a real Beatles fan when John Lennon said everybody should try LSD. I followed him. And a lot of Eastern mystical religions, and that just came to a dead end. I didn't find any of the answers or solutions or happiness that I was looking for. So my conversion as a young man actually happened at a place called Le Brie, a Christian study community southwest of London. And that's where I encountered intelligent, young-ish Christians. The staff was in their late 30s, 40s. And then the students or guests or residents were all my age. They were basically college, university students looking for answers and so on. So it was in the middle of, so I grew up in a Christian atmosphere. It became sorely tested. And then it was really through through reflection and being dissatisfied with the non-Christian way of life and that worldview that led me to reconsider the faith and to consider it in a fresh light.
Well, thank you for that, Charles. Maybe, like, do you want to talk a little bit about, like, what kind of led you into the world of philosophy? Like, you talked about your background and, like, your religious journey. What led you into philosophy and your interest there?
Sorry to do this, but it also involves a kind of a narrative. As I had two older half-brothers, they were the result of my parents. They were married before they got together, and each of them brought a half brother into the family. And both of them hated me for whatever reason. One put it very simply. I said, you know, he said many, many years later, after both my parents had died, he said, you know, me and Jim have hated you your whole life. I've stopped hating you. And I said, why? And he said, because you were born. And I think it was, he said it was due to envy and jealousy. I was the firstborn. So constantly received sarcasm, again, bullying even before boarding school. And when I started reading philosophy as a 15-year-old, I started with a book called The Story of Philosophy. I found it a non-bullying, non-manipulative, pacific world in which you can reason with each other, you treat each other with dignity and respect. It's not the constant sarcasm that I was accustomed to. So I got to philosophy as a kind of refuge. And my rebirth as a Christian, as a young man, and my really recovering my first love for philosophy happened at the same time. You know, philosophy just means the love of wisdom, philosophia. And as I sought wisdom through Christ and relationship with God and through the church, through the community of faith, my love for philosophy just got out of control. I mean, it was just, you know, that was it for life, really. So I practice philosophy. I try to practice my faith daily, but I also seek to practice philosophy daily.
That's amazing to hear, Charles. And I appreciate you sharing these stories because, like, the purpose of, like, this video that we're recording, this podcast, I think is to share these stories with listeners to help people understand you and your story, because you're a lot more than the books you write and the articles that you've produced. And I'm hoping today to kind of expose that to people. So what about, like, who are some of the people that influenced you the most, Charles, like in your philosophical journey or maybe in also your personal journey? Who are some of the people that influenced you the most?
Probably really, it would be C.S. Lewis from the beginning. When I started reading him, just as I was slightly drifting from the faith. But when I came back to the faith at Le Brie, it was Lewis, Tolkien, Francis Schaeffer for some time. I moved beyond some of his own work in my own thinking, in the sense that his kind of outlook was very boiled down, pared down, and didn't quite have the richness. So actually, the philosophers that have most influenced me, non-professional philosophers wouldn't know. Big H.D. Lewis, A.E. Taylor, Austin Farr. A lot of these people were known to Lewis. Austin Farr was a close friend, actually his the priest who actually presided at his funeral. So, and actually it was three things. It was the Bible, the Book of Common Prayer, which I happen to have here, a daily use of this. And then Evelyn Underhill was huge. She died in 1941 or 42. She revived Christian mysticism in the early part of the 20th century. She was actually the first person to actually have a position as a lectureship at Oxford as a woman in the 20s. So I got to a point of where on some levels I would consider myself evangelical in the sense that I'm open to the experiential aspect of God in Christ and the like. But it through Evelyn Underhill, I became more Catholic or interested in Eastern Orthodoxy and the mystics of the church as really nourishing a real spiritual hunger for more than, here's the faith, here are the creeds, this is why one might believe this or that, and more interested in the interior soul and the life lived in the love of God and of neighbor. So meditation is very important to me. I try to seek to do meditative centering prayer every day. And so those books, and especially at the end, Evelyn Underhill was just, for a while in my mid-20s, I was reading a mystic a month. That was my thing. So it'd be St. Teresa of Avila, St. John of the Cross, St. Francis de Sales. And I would just dive into this literature and memorize lengthy passages from these texts. And I found them really enriching.
Well, thank you. And what about maybe some of the events, Charles? You mentioned kind of your story and growing up and some of it. Like, what are some of the events that influenced you the most as you kind of went along your journey? Or are going in your journey? There's still a lot more to go, for sure.
Well, I'll tell you a funny event, and then I'll tell you two events. One actually happened, and I wrote it up in a book, but it was the first time I identified myself to, in this case, it was a stranger, as a Christian. So I had become a Christian at this place southwest of London and Le Brie, but I had not come, I came out, as it were, with my parents, letting them know, and some of my friends, but really, the first time was actually in Carlisle, just south of the border between England and Scotland. And this will be very absurd, but true. I was on a bench writing a letter, and it was at the time Brideshead Revisited, a famous book by Evelyn Waugh, was popular, and the main character had a teddy bear, and somebody gave me, I'm 19 or 20 years old, and I had a teddy bear named Thaddeus after one of the names of one of Jesus' disciples, not one that's often used. So I'm on this bench, and this guy comes up to me, motorcycle, ripped jacket, looks kind of dangerous, and he goes, "What are you doing?" And I said, I'm writing a letter. With my friend Thaddeus, and I have this teddy bear here. And he goes, well, I have a friend too. And then he puts his boot up on the bench and he lifts up his leg and there's a knife that's strapped to his leg. And he goes, "His name is Edgar." And then I did something absurd. I took Thaddeus, the teddy bear, said, "Say hello to Edgar, Thaddeus." And fortunately, he laughed, and we then actually had a half a pint of beer in the pub right next to him. And I witnessed to him. I said, "Well, something interesting about me is I've recently, as an adult, become a Christian." And so that was actually being self-identifying as a Christian on that moment was pretty big. Another event, kind of random, but I was in China with a group from the Society of Christian Philosophers. We were at a restaurant, this is maybe 9-10 years ago, and I had this almost out-of-the-body experience, maybe just bad digestion, but it felt like it was a it's a transforming moment. And I was with somebody who since became a friend, Victoria Harrison, who's a practicing Christian, and she's a Roman Catholic. But in any case, we just had this prayerful moment in which I had such an overwhelming feeling of the numinous, God's reality. So that's another story, but it was a story I wrote up in a book called The Golden Cord. And I think that life is filled potentially with opportunities of really, if you open yourself up to the experience of God, and sometimes it's very non-dramatic, you know, that is, the experience of God can be simply in like the prayer you offered on both of our behalfs before we began. That to me, I have a sense of the divine, a sense of the fellowship. But over my life, and I hope for others that are perhaps listening, there have been moments of, I call them golden cords, that is, moments where you get some kind of sense of the awesomeness of God. I call it golden cord, just one footnote. William Blake said, and he's speaking kind of on behalf of the divine, he said, "I give you a golden cord. Simply wind it up. It will lead you in to Jerusalem through heaven's gate." And it's this notion that all around us there are moments that when the you are receptive to it, that you can actually have a very vivid, vivacious experience of the living God. So I've been graced by a number of those. But so those are two stories.
Well, those are really amazing stories. Thank you for sharing, Charles. You talked about some of the events. What about like some of the books? What are some of the books or maybe articles you've read that have influenced you the most along with your thinking?
Well, I would say, you know, Evelyn Underhill, you know, again, when I completed my BA, I went on to do a master's in philosophy, then did a master's in theology at Harvard Divinity School. And I remember this afternoon where I'm in the library, nobody else is on the same floor, and I see all these old books filled with Christian mysticism, and I see Evelyn Underhill's work there. And I must say, Evelyn Underhill has been a regular companion to me. Books that might be more popular that have shaped me, I would say really a lot of contemporary philosophy like William Alston, Alvin Plantinga, Nicholas Waltersdorf, a lot of the prominent Christian philosophers that have been active over the last 40 years.
So what about, like, this is something I wonder about, and I love asking this question, like, what are your daily habits like, or maybe weekly habits? Like, you've had a large, like, academic output, Charles, and it seems like you've done a lot and experienced a lot. Like, what are your habits like that have helped kind of shape you and what you're doing?
Well, great question. During my 40 years as a professional philosopher in the classroom, my life would be beginning the day in prayer and meditation. And also, my courses, this will sound like I'm bragging, but they were really over-enrolled, maybe because I was a high grader, who knows? But I would memorize and pray for all the students that I would have. So I, in addition to getting their roll call, but I would take pictures of all the students that I've had. I still have all of them for over the years, you know, thousands and thousands of students. So beginning and ending the day in prayer was really important to me. The other habit that might be kind of interest is that all my adult life from college on has been exercised by using cards like these. And what I do is in my philosophical reading, this is a book on the meaning of life, which I'm just really enjoying. I would ferret out, you know, whatever I wanted to memorize or to maybe for me to write about or just to reflect on. And so in terms of habits, continuous reading and rereading of things that are both spiritually and philosophically significant to me. Probably just one other point that might be interesting for two points about habits, because I recommend them. One is when I was first starting out in philosophy, I would find, this was the case for two essays I thought were just perfect. I wish I could write like that. And this was before computers and typewriters we had. And I typed both essays, just going over every sentence, like how did that sentence connect with this one? And so that kind of internalized what I aspired to in terms of writing. The other thing I still do is I read a dictionary, usually a different one, but at least once a year, or a thesaurus. And I find that and sometimes I space it out over 2 months. My wife makes fun of me on this. I'm on the beach, and I'm saying, you know, what are you reading? A dictionary, you know? And I said, yeah, the M's are really good, you know? It's just absurd. But it's an excellent way to deal with writer's block. Like if you're not sure of your own writing, it's sometimes good to just randomly read five pages of a dictionary, and it keeps you from getting too clotted. I was just reading a friend of mine's book, and I'm not going to say his name, but I noticed every other page he's using the word however, and on one page it was three times, and I'm going, oh, why not and yet, or any kind of synonym, or just don't overuse it. And I found that reading a dictionary, which you didn't write, compels you to follow another mind and gets different words. It can enrich your vocabulary.
That's something interesting. And this is why I love doing conversations like this, is like, I never thought I'd be thinking about like the purpose of like reading a dictionary every year. That's awesome. Charles, what kind of like advice or wisdom would you give to people who want to grow? Like we think about people that might be listening to this who are interested in maybe like Christian philosophy or apologetics, or maybe they aren't a Christian and they're just interested in philosophy. What advice would you give to people like that who want to grow and kind of continue in their journey and their studies and whatnot?
Perseverance, being part of a community of inquirers, is really good. Reading a book with somebody. So perhaps you're not in a class, or you're in a secular university, but finding often a believer, but it could be an agnostic or someone even hostile, but really being open to inquiry, not being afraid, and not being afraid of criticism. Being willing to say when you're asked a question, you know, I'm going to have to think about that. I can't answer right away. And that's what I would do. That's what I would recommend people of any age. And the reason why I think a community is good is you used to be able to tell self-educated people from those that have gone through college, university, or community of faith or whatever, is that, and I'm not sure it's true now, but it used to be, in my experience, that those people were not very self-critical or into criticism. And because if you're just by yourself and you're reading a book and saying, hey, this is great, I believe it, or I don't believe it. And so, sometimes it needs a challenge. And I think none of us relish criticism. I mean, if I get a bad book review or even just a mediocre one, you know, it hurts. And or in a classroom, if a student evaluation is, if it's anything less than this was the greatest, you know, I just go, oh my God, it's terrible. But being in, like having a podcast like this and hearing different opinions, and where you can have, again, disagreements that were very unlike the disagreements that I had with my brothers. I mean, I rarely had disagreements. It was just pure sarcasm. But really being able to debate, let's say, if it, you know, the nature of God's atonement, the Trinity. There are different theories of the Trinity, the different theories of human nature, of morality, and also the hot topics of today. So my recommendation would be to persevere. There is a huge community of Christian philosophers. And you can find us through any number of societies, like the Society of Christian Philosophers. They have a journal called Faith and Philosophy. I was the book review editor of that for about 8 years. And I read it regularly. And there's another one called Philosophia Christi, the philosophy of Christ. So internet resources are just great. And also, yeah, this encounter with other minds is important. So it's not just a soliloquy, you know, you're just talking to yourself or something, but really being in the world, going to a coffee shop and say, hey, why don't we discuss this book? That's what I'm really recommending.
Well, Charles, thank you so much for coming on today. I appreciate you sharing about you and the stories and just the influences and everything that shaped your life. I think there's a lot here for people to hold on to and think about, especially the stories. Like, I think that stories are so important, and just you just sharing some of your stories helps me to think about just things about walking as a Christian and trying to grow in philosophy and things like that. So, Charles, just thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. I love talking with you, and I appreciate your time. So thank you.
You're the best, Zach. I really love our exchanges. So thank you very much. Take care.
Yeah, and thank you everyone for listening. I appreciate this and you guys and your time. I encourage you to check out Charles and everything he's doing. And if you like it here at Apologetics, be sure to subscribe, leave a like, all that fun stuff. And if you value what you do, become a patron at patreon.com/adhereandapologetics. But Charles, one last time, thank you so much for coming on. This has been great.
You're welcome. Thank you.
And thank you, everyone, for listening. I hope you have a good one, and God bless. We'll catch you next time.